We'll shower you with the August 8th, 2009 edition of The Rain Report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is The Rain Report. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. Meteor scatter. It's a mode of amateur radio little discussed in most circles. However, not this week. NASA reports the Perseid meteor showers, slated to peak August 12th, promise to be much more than your hit-or-miss opportunity for making 1,000-mile contacts on VHF. For the details on this annual meteoric phenomenon, and to explain just what this mysterious astronomical event is, Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, caught up with Joe Lynch, N6CL, ham radio author and editor of CQ VHF magazine.
Meteor scatter has been around for 60, 70 years as far as ham radio usage is concerned. Meteor scatter is an outgrowth of watching the various meteor showers that occur during the course of the year. We're headed into one of the most famous one. It's called the Perseids meteor shower. The Perseids meteor shower is caused by debris that comes off the comet Swift Tuttle. These meteor showers, most of them have an origination with a comet. A comet has an elliptical orbit that, depending on its period, might be a few years, it might be hundreds of years, and as it goes closer and closer to the sun in its elliptical orbit, the gravitational pull of the sun on its tail will pull debris away from the comet, and that debris will continue to follow in the same orbit with the comet. What's going on with the prediction on the August 11th and 12th is that when the comet Swift Tuttle rotated around the sun and the debris was pulled away from the tail of the comet and followed behind, that occurred in the year 1610. As the Earth travels in its orbit every year, we tend to go close to the trail of the comet Swift Tuttle debris field. Another thing that influences these trails is the gravitational pull of different planets. And this year, the planet Saturn has influenced that trail, pulling it closer to where we're going to collide with it. So it's like you're driving down the road, and all of a sudden you drive into a dust storm as you're going down the road, and then you continue to drive on, and you drive out of the dust storm. Well, what we're doing on Earth is we're rotating into a dust storm and then out of that dust storm. So while we're in that dust storm, the debris from that, little particles of sand and ice and so on, are hitting the atmosphere. And for that period of time, for several hours, we're in that dust storm. It's lighting up the ionosphere, causing the propagation to occur. It's a fascinating thing that as to how it's occurring, but most people just like, all right, this is happening. It's time for me to get on the radio, or it's time for me to get the lawn chair out and watch the sky.
Will this occur worldwide?
No, because it occurs over a certain part of the world every year. Now, this year is very intense over North America. Next year, it might be more intense over another part of the world. It just depends on the rotation of the Earth and where we are when we hit that debris field. You could be in this dust storm driving down I-35 in Kansas, and a few hours later, that dust storm has moved on, and you'd have to be over in Iowa someplace to get into the dust storm. So it depends on where you are on the Earth and what year it is, and where when the Earth runs into the debris field, or the trail of the comet. The International Meteor Organization has a website, IMO.net, that you can go onto and click onto 2009 and see all the known meteor showers that occur throughout the course of the year. The one we're talking about so much, it's gotten so much publicity thanks to NASA and its prediction, is the Perseids meteor shower, but there are other meteor showers that occur during the course of the month of July and August. And then in September, there's another one. In October, there's another one. In November, and so on. It depends on, again, where we are in relationship to the orbit of a particular comet as to how intense that meteor shower is going to be in a particular year. It's good to look at that as a source to know when these meteor showers occur so that you can participate in them as a way of making contacts with people.
Please repeat that web address again.
The International Meteor Organization, www.imo.net, and they predict that the best time for the activity will be a maximum around August 12th between 1730 UTC and 2000 UTC. As I mentioned, the 1610 Perseids Trail will also cause activity to occur around 0900 UTC earlier in that same day. So there will be actually the possibility of two peaks, a bit of a peak between 0800 and 0900, and then another peak later in in the day around 1730 to 2000. It's a very active and very dependable shower. It occurs in the summertime, a time for people can go out on a nice summer night and look up at the sky and seeing all the falling stars as a result of little tiny grains of sand entering the Earth's atmosphere and burning up. And when that little tiny grain of sand enters the atmosphere and burns up, it causes a certain ionization of the E layer of the atmosphere. And when that ionization occurs, that creates a path for propagation. Depending on the intensity of the ionization, it can make a path for propagation into VHF and very, very rarely into UHF frequencies. You can hear this on the amateur bands on a sporadic basis any time of the day and any day of the week. By listening to 10 meters, you can listen to a little burst of a signal of a ham radio station, and that is when an ionization has taken place and you're hearing a distant station maybe somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 miles away from you, and it goes away. That ionization is very brief. I know it's different from a sporadic E type contact where the atmosphere is ionized maybe for several minutes, hours at a time, and so contacts can take place for long periods of time. Sporadic E is very popular for the VHF operator on 6 meters, and during late December through January through February, and again in late May through June through July and even into August, sporadic E occurs quite a bit. Ham radio operators like to get on 6 meters and make contacts 1,000 miles to 1,500 miles away. Early July, I was on my way to dinner, and I had the radio on in the car on 6 meters. And from Tulsa, Oklahoma, I worked at 3 different stations in succession in Quebec, Vermont, and in Maine, all on sporadic E, because it was happening at that time of day. But the E layer is about 60 to 70 miles up off the surface of the Earth. And with that height, when a signal bounces off the E layer, it can travel anywhere between 1,000 to 1,500 miles away from where it originated.
What do I need to operate meteor scatter?
Well, because the Perseus meteor shower this year is going to be very good, there is prediction that there will be somewhere upwards of 200 meteors entering during the course of an hour, which means that there will be a lot of ionization taking place. Your regular VHF radio, your regular 6-meter radio on sideband, and a decent antenna, 3 to 5 elements on 6 meters, will be sufficient for you to have an experience on sideband with meteor scatter. The predicted times where the peak should be somewhere around 0800, 0900 UTC on August 12th. Be kind of a rise in the evening of August 11th and occurring throughout the night and then tapering off in late morning on August 12th. 6 meters is going to be the most active because it's a lower frequency. This works inverse with regard to propagation. The higher the frequency, the less likely the propagation. But 2 meters will be very active with meteor scatter contacts, and the calling frequency is always very busy. But with the activity being so intense, just operating on 144, 210, or 215 or something like that off the calling frequency, you're going to be hearing a lot of people calling CQ meteor scatter, making real quick calls, and then you'll hear somebody making a real quick call, CQ meteor scatter or something like that, and then you'll return and you'll hear the person's call sign. You'll say the person's call sign, your call sign, and your grid square, or S2, which is a signal report, like HF, we use signal reports of 5.9 or something like that. S2 means that the signal strength is good enough for a sustained contact on meteor scatter, and the other person will come back and say, Roger, S2, and that completes the contact. But meteor scatter occurs all the time. There's sporadic meteor scatter that's occurring right now. The best time is early morning hours. As you approach noon, it starts to taper off, but then picking up again in the evening.
You're in the middle of a discussion about meteor showers and sporadic E between CQ VHF magazine editor Joe Lynch, N6CL, and Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP. We'll return to their discussion about the predicted August 12th peak of the Perseid meteor showers and more in a moment. If you run the rain report on your repeater or simplex net, and you are, of course, free to do so, we recommend you subscribe to the free Rain podcast. You'll receive these weekly programs automatically and won't be scrambling the last minute to download them. See therainreport.com for details. We'll be right back.
for the very serious meteor scatter operator, you'll need to have a computer and software called WSJT software developed by Joe Taylor, K1JT. You'll need a computer with a soundboard and that interfaces with your ham radio station and a decent antenna. And with this particular kind of software, you can make meteor scatter contacts by watching the signal and then reading the information digitally as it comes in on your screen.
Is there a website that tracks meteor scatter the way that PropNet tracks 10 meters?
There is a WSJT group. It's a Yahoo group that has about 1,300 members. You can join that group by just getting onto groups.yahoo.com and looking for WSJT, and then click on that, and then you can click on a link that allows you to join, and then you have to be approved to join the list. That would be one place to start. People all over the world that are using the WSJT software program and setting up SCEDs and coordinating SCEDs and setting up particular activity days where people are going to be on the air and looking for each other.
What if I'm a new ham and I have no equipment for meteor scatter whatsoever? What should I buy or what should I look for?
A decent radio would be something that covers the VHF bands. For instance, ICOM 706 covers the VHF bands of 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters on sideband and CW. You'll need a radio that covers those bands on the different modes besides FM. That's not to say that you can't make meteor scatter contacts on FM. It's possible, it's just a little bit more difficult because most people on FM don't know what you need to be looking for. And then you're going to need an antenna that would be, for instance, on 6 meters, something simple, 3 to 5 elements. On 2 meters, somewhere around 8 to 12 elements. Because everyone operates on the weak signal bands with horizontal polarization, then you will need to orient your antenna horizontally. Then it's good to know where the meteors are coming from in the sky, because there is where you're going to need to point your antenna so you can have a common point where other people are also going to be pointing so that you take advantage of the reflection that's occurring.
So a vertical antenna would not do much for you?
Not normally with regard to meteor scatter, but when you have these very intense showers like the Perseids or a meteor storm where you really have hundreds of meteors falling at a particular time frame, then you don't need much at all. You can operate with a vertical antenna and make contacts. I've done it. Driving down the road when we've had a good, high, intense burst of activities, I have the 2-meter radio on, and I'm hearing stations all over the area that's in the direction where the signals are being reflected back from. So I'll just get in there and start calling, and lo and behold, I'll make a contact.
Do meteor scatter signals have a distinctive sound to them?
Only in that they sound the same way as a signal on Braddock E. If you're thinking like a aurora and there's a Doppler shift and something like that, it's not really distinctive, except if you get a really good burn, the signal will suddenly rise and be very loud and then disappear. You might be hitting a couple of rocks simultaneously, so you might hear a signal rise up, go down, rise up, and go down in the course of the time that you're trying to make the contact. And sometimes you'll experience two different kinds of enhancement. You might be hearing a station very weakly from tropospheric enhancement, and all of a sudden that same station just bursts out really loud. That's the meteor's enhancement, and then it goes away.
You mentioned that meteor scatter actually is more likely to be heard on 10 meters.
Yes, because 10 meters is one band that has a lot of sporadic enhancement. A lot of activity takes place on 10 meters. There are a lot of beacons on 10 meters, so people are listening for these beacons and listening for 10 meters to be open. You can hear sporadic on lower bands, but there's other propagation out there that tends to kind of cover up the sporadic enhancement. So when you're listening on 10 meters, you can hear the beacons that are between 28,200 and 28,300. All over the country. That's why you can detect the sporadic E, is because you'll be listening on a frequency and where a known beacon is there, and all of a sudden that beacon appears for a few seconds, and then it goes away.
Ironically, my TS-480 is on 28.4. The band is open like it has been, as you know, almost every day this summer.
Sporadic E, as I mentioned earlier, occurs inversely according to the frequency. So 28 megahertz, like you just mentioned, it's been open quite a bit over the summer. As the E-layer is more ionized, the frequency of the ionization increases. There have been meteor scatter signals heard as high as 432 megahertz, but those are very, very infrequent, and it has to be almost a storm, meteor storm event for that to occur. So you just work your way up the frequency spectrum. So when you're hearing a lot of activity on 10 meters, then you'll want to move up to 6 meters in the same way. If you're hearing a lot of activity on 6 meters, you'll want to move up onto 2 meters and start working the meteor scatter that way.
What are your call-in frequencies for 6, 2, and 220?
For 6 meters, it would be 50.125. That's the calling frequency, 50.125 megahertz. For 2 meters, it's going to be 144.2 megahertz. And for 222, it's going to be 222.1 megahertz. Those are the calling frequencies. But when you're looking at what's going to happen on August 11th and 12th, you're not going to make very many contacts if you just hang around on the calling frequencies, because everybody else is going to be hanging around the calling frequencies. It's best to kind of move a few kilohertz off, like on 2 meters, 144.205 upwards or downwards, and just start making noise. When the band's open, you're going to hear somebody's kind of splattering, and you can spin your dial up there and hear somebody calling CQ and quickly answer that person and make a meteor scatter contact.
Now, these frequencies you've mentioned are for single sideband load. Obviously,
yes.
If you can operate CW, Morse code, you'll probably have a better time of it under marginal meteor scatter conditions. Is that right?
Yes. However, the digital mode, the WSJT mode, bridges that gap. Even more marginal circumstances, you can still make meteor scatter contacts using this digital software that Joe Taylor has developed in order to sustain the signal is to a point where almost you can't hear it in your receiver, but your transceiver can pick it up, and then it can be digitally displayed on your computer.
Reminiscent of what you find on PSK31.
Sure.
If someone would like to communicate with you more about meteor scatter or Sporadic E, what email address should they use, Joe?
Oh, n6cl@amsat.org. Best thing to do is to look at sources. My columnist for CQVHF magazine is NW7US, Thomas Hood. He has all kinds of information in each column. He writes a column for me, for CQVHF. He writes a monthly column for CQ magazine, and he writes another column for Popular Communications magazine, all on propagation, the various aspects of what's happening around the world as far as propagation is concerned.
For someone who would like to know more about that, go to www.hfradio.org.
Just to give a plug for CQVHF, the summer issue is going to be in people's mailboxes in the next few days, and there's going to be an article in there on using beacons that are associated with these buoys in the ocean that monitor tsunamis. These beacons are on 162 megahertz, and a way for predicting tropospheric propagation is to listen for these beacons. There'll be an article written by Dave Peterson, N7BHC, in there talking about that.
That was Joe Lynch, N6CL, ham radio author and editor of CQVHF magazine, speaking with Rain founder-producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, about meteor scatter, specifically about the projected August 12th peak of Earth's passage through the Perseid meteor showers. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2009 Rain, all rights reserved. Now, for Hap Holly, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.